Good evening.
Good evening, Hanok.
How are you, Jasmine?
Good, and you?
You have any questions for tonight?
Yeah, I would like to ask a little more about the astrological signs, the north node and the south node. And
okay. Well, let's wait for a few more people to come on. I heard somebody just come on now.
It was Hannah.
Good evening. Do you have a question for tonight?
No.
Okay. Jasmine has a question. We'll start off with, but let's give it another minute to see if somebody else can. All right, Jasmine, why don't we begin? Why don't you state your question again?
That I want to know more about the astrological signs, like what is in depth, the north node, south node, and the other. I guess you said there are 13 attributes or
I'll explain it. I'll explain it because you're a little confused with your terminology. So let me explain it.
Thank you.
But there is, I think somebody else came on, so I want to check if they have a question. Malka, do you have a question for this evening?
I have just a couple. It goes back to the reincarnation of the me, and also
I'm having difficulty hearing you. Are you speaking into the phone?
Yes. Can you hear me?
No, I'm still having difficulty.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes. What did you do? So we know next time.
Okay. Yes.
So
it goes back to the reincarnation of the new and old souls, that study.
Okay. All right. So let's hold off on that. Let me answer the question that was asked by Jasmine about astrology. Right. So, Jasmine, you're asking a very broad question that will take about 27 hours to answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm joking. I'm not joking about the 27 hours. It's just an estimate because the material you're asking about is very extensive. Abraham was the first astrologer. Other people think groups think that he wasn't the first, but he learned it because they refer to in the book of Daniel, certain people are referred to as I forget the English translation, I forget the word, but essentially the area of Persia, which is where Abraham was born, in Ur Kasdim, and so forth, that area was very strong in astrological knowledge. And Abraham wrote the book called the Sefer Yetzirah. That book had, I believe it was 400 sections. Some people say it was 400 verses. We have 6 sections in the book of the Sefer Yetzirah in our world today. What happened between the 400 and the 6? The answer is that information was taught to sages, and eventually that information got written into the Talmud. But it's not clear where it is in the Talmud. It's spread throughout the Talmud. And it's not clear how that information is related to the Sefer Yetzirah. When the Jewish people were exiled, the first temple was destroyed, and they were marched into exile, they went to that same area where Abraham first came out of. And the book of Daniel was taught the wisdom. And the Jewish people who came back from Persia and rebuilt Jerusalem and rebuilt the Second Temple, they brought words from the astrological influences. They brought Babylonian words for the months. So we call them Nisan, because that's what they were named in Babylonia. While in the Torah, the month is called number one, or it's called the month of Aviv, meaning spring. But Aviv also can be translated as the father of 12. So we see that there's interaction between wisdom that doesn't come from the Torah and the Torah, except that wisdom was there beforehand because it was written by Abraham Avinu, Abraham the patriarch. Now, astrology from Babylonia uses a chart. That chart is divided into a circle. It's actually 3 circles. One inside the other. One of those circles is a circle of houses, which has characteristics and personality traits. And the other circle has the astrological signs. Now, there's a disagreement as to whether the circle should be divided into 12 30-degree arcs, or they should be divided according to the way the stars appear from the earth. So some of those arcs are larger than 30 degrees and some are smaller. Now along comes the modern generation, the discovery of Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. That's in about the 1840s, 1850s, around that time. Hebrew astrology only utilizes the 7 other planets. Saturn, Mars, the Moon, Venus, Mercury, and the Sun. Those are the seven planets that Hebrew astrology utilizes. But in my opinion, the sages always knew there were three others. There had to be three others because there are 10 Sephirot and not seven. So now that they have been discovered, what do we do with them? How are they influencing things? In Hebrew astrology, they were not taken into account because their energy flowed through the seven other planets. Just like the three upper Sephirot blow through the seven Sephirot that are in our world, the lower seven. But we do have people who have achieved their control. They have achieved their correction. Or they're almost close to their correction. And so those influences will affect them. And they become affected by the final letters, which have a different gematria. They have the dual gematriot. They have the normal letter gematria, and they have the final letter gematria. So we see that the Hebrew language gives us the opportunity to understand how to handle the astrological influences of the three outer planets. But it doesn't apply to every human being. It only applies to those human beings that are close to their correction. All that I've just said, the last part, is my opinion. You have to decide if this is your truth or not. You need to go and Google astrological history and learn all about it, and then make up your own mind whether I'm speaking truth or I'm not. Now, within the astrological chart that you have this competing discussion of whether there should be 30-degree arcs or different-sized arcs, and the different-sized arcs is called sidereal astrology. And in my weekly email where I discuss astrological influences, I jump back and forth between the two, between the modern astrology, between the Hebrew astrology and the Hebrew astrology utilized in the sidereal chart. But we have the moon that goes above the the plane of the universe, of the solar system. All of the planets circle the sun in the same plane, except the moon goes above the plane and below the plane. And where it crosses the plane, the astrological science says that is a spot that relates to your previous incarnations. They've named those two spots where it goes above and then when it comes back and goes below as the north node and the south node. The south node tells you the mistakes you made in your last lifetime. The north node tells you what life lessons you came to learn in this life lesson, in this reincarnation. Can you learn a life lesson if you haven't fixed all of the mistakes from your previous life? And the answer is yes, you can. Because those are the kinds of things that happen in the physical world. You can take a stick, put one end on fire and the other end in ice, and you have the stick doesn't have one temperature. The physical world allows you to put different inner essences in the same vessel. That's where the confusion of all the chaos comes from. So you have the north node. So on the day you were born, at the time you were born, where your north node is tells you the where the south node is, and it tells you what mistakes you made in last lifetime and what life lessons you have to learn in this lifetime. Now, we also have a transition, because every year there is a difference between the charts that are being used in the Western astrology and the sidereal astrology. They are adjusted every year. It changes roughly by a degree. And so the essence is, today, which is 2,500 years ago from the time of the Babylonian astrology, there is now a 13th astrological sign. And the Kabbalists know there always had to be 13 tribes, because if you count the tribes, you have 13 suns. So there has to be 13 astrological influences. But again, that 13th sign only applies to the people who are close to their tikkun. But the majority of humanity, the 12 signs is the way those influences are paramount for those people, the majority of humanity. But the few who have warranted, who relate to the final letter Gematria, who relate to the three outer planets, who relate to the sign, the astrology influences are different. So now that I have totally confused you, because it's all astrology is relative, but Western astrology doesn't teach relativity. Western astrology teaches that everything is preordained. You cannot change anything. Eastern astrology has that impact as well, because they come from the idea of karma. Karma that is fixed, that you have to deal with, you have to experience what you have to experience, chaos or pleasure, your life is set. This is what Eastern religions and Eastern astrology teach. There is some adjustment in that as they become closer to, as we move forward in time into our generation. So now they say that karma can be changed a little bit. Whereas Hebrew astrology and the Kabbalah has always said, you can change the movie, which is the same as changing your karma. But it is very difficult to change your movie. You have to use binding by striking. You have to stop your reactions. You have to begin to delve into why you react the way you do and change the way you react. So you begin to see from my discussion, there's hints. It's not real clear, but the truth of it, the matter is, everything is relative, and everything is unified, and everything ties together. If we would only use all of our brain and pick all of these different 10,000, 100,000, 10 million bits and pieces of information and integrate it into ourselves. And that's what we do when we utilize our intuition. That's what we do when we stop our reactions and use binding by striking. Now, if you want me to run a 27-hour course on astrology, you have to give me about a year and a half to develop it, to write out the handouts and so forth. So, Jasmine, have I answered your question? Does anybody else have other questions?
Yeah, thank you.
Hana, you said you didn't have a question. Is that correct? She may have gotten offline, or she's... Malka, are you there? You have a question.
Yes. My question is on that reincarnation, new souls and old souls. I didn't get a chance to listen to it all, but I did listen to part of it. I came to the part that says when you're back to back, you have divine light. And when you're face to face, you're unified and you should not fear. And when it said back to back, you had the protection. And then the front, you would receive the light. Can you explain as to the divine light back to back? And when you're face to face, you're unified. I kind of understand it, but then what is the protection for back to back? Is that when you're back to back, you have no separation, so your vessel's not broken?
When you're back to back, the female is internal and the male is external. So the female is looking out of the back of the male head. But now we have to ask the question, how tall are the male and the female? Because in order to be back to back, if the female is outside of the male body, but the spine, so to speak, are together, then the female is looking out, but there's no protection on the female. Because the male cannot protect her if she's outside of his body. And that's where you're getting confused, I think. You visualize back to back as if the woman is hanging off the spine of the male. Her feet don't touch the ground, because the female is shorter than the male. That's the way Adam and Eve were created. But she was then... Then the process, once created, the process means when they're back to back, the fronts can be attacked by the negative system. Because what does the negative system want? It wants light. And in the case of Adam and Eve, the way they're described, their skin is translucent, like our fingernails and toenails, so they are radiating light. And if there's no protection, the negative system, the shells just wrap themselves around those two bodies and draw the light and drain it. Because the essence of the negative system is that it's a vessel that is impure, which means it cannot handle the full light from Hashem. So it sits on the vessel, getting the energy that it can get, so that it doesn't burn up, because with the impurities, that light would burn the negative vessel. Well, after Adam and Eve are created, then they turn face to face. Now when you're face to face, if you visualize a male and female body, at the youthful age of 20, if in perfect health, they fit together, all the parts fit together, and they're in total unity, and the negative system cannot get the light from their fronts, only from their backs. And that amount of light is reduced from the what radiates from the fronts. So it's not a consideration. It's not something to be concerned about if the negative system is hanging on your back, because it's not affecting you. It's only when you are by yourself, when you're separated from your other partner, from your soulmate. Now, the terms old soul and new soul are defined very differently than what the modern age, new age spiritual systems talk about old souls and new souls. In the new age systems, an old soul is somebody who's reincarnated 1,000 times. A new soul is someone who came into this world the first time or the first few times. But the people who are teaching that, those spiritual systems, they're modern. They're people who were lowered spiritually. They really have no relationship to the true knowledge, which you have to go and read the handout that that discussion takes place all around, because it's really too complicated for me to try and simplify in this question and answer system session. But if you have any specific questions after you've heard it all and contemplated it, I'll be happy to try and help you with it.
Okay.
But I hope it's given you structure. Go ahead.
Yes. Going back to how Adam and Eve was created back to back. So you said the female was shorter. So I'm visualizing that there was two heads, four arms, four legs, and they were connected at the spine. So
correct.
The female had all her female parts, and the male had all his male parts, correct?
No.
So basically...
No. None of the digestive system was needed because they received energy and food directly through their skin.
Okay.
So the bodies, the internal parts of the body were very different.
So basically, he was like, I'm just going to throw this out, he was kind of like piggybacking her, you know, carrying her around on his back, basically.
That is the way I visualize it. That is my understanding. Is it truthful? Does somebody have another opinion? A sage have another opinion? Of course. But this is the way I visualize it.
So why did he go looking for a partner among the animal kingdom? He knew he had a soul attached to his back.
Remember I said, was she internal or external?
Yeah.
Do you feel your pancreas right now?
Do I feel my pancreas? No.
Yeah. Do you think Adam felt Eve if she was inside of him? Answer's no.
way.
There is a process to go from back to back to face to face. That process takes place every year, again, for the first time. That process is the 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. They put Adam to sleep, called dormita in, I believe it's in Latin. They put Adam to sleep, and they operate on him and take her out of the inside and make her her whole self herself. They separate the spines. The spines represent the Sefirah of Yesod. And they bring her around, and they're now face-to-face, but they're really not face-to-face. They're side-by-side. And our world is trying to bring the two halves of the soul all the way around to be face-to-face. Because side-to-side is just as dangerous, quote-unquote, whatever that means, to the negative system. Because the negative system, while she and he can now see them coming and try and protect themselves, it's still they're able to attack the front and not just receive the energy from the back. And so that's why this is a metaphor I'm describing to help you visualize the same thing that I visualize. But I'm not sure, you know, my teachers have never said this to me in this way. Rabbi Ashlag has written in Hebrew certain descriptions, and we're studying those essays, and part of what we have read already hints at it and touches on it. And every time I read it, I modify that image that I have in my head. Because the more information you have, the more you can consolidate and have the image that works for you.
I guess the Ark, you know, has the two, figures, I guess, male, female, I'm not sure, I don't know how to describe that, but they're face-to-face. At one time, and I don't know why I think this, at one time they were back-to-back, you know, placed on the Ark, but then they're face-to-face.
Well, let's start over. Yeah. You're mixing two things. You're mixing Adam and Eve with Noah. Well, what do you mean by Ark as it applies to Adam and Eve?
Well, I don't. I mean, I kind of went off subject there. Just kind of visualizing the tabernacle in Moses' time. So I was just see if there was any connection there. And they're covered. They're, you know, the wings, if you want to call them wings, are covering them, but they're face to face. So I'm just trying to make a connection, and maybe there is no connection.
I'm not following what you're visualizing as it applies to Moses. Because Moses is a man who is a reincarnation of Abel. And his father-in-law is a reincarnation of Cain. Cain killed Abel because Abel had his soulmate, Cain's soulmate, as his twin sister. And the tradition was, or the relationship was, Abel had two soulmates. So he was married to two women. Cain wanted his soulmate that was married to Abel. So over that jealousy, for lack of a better term, he killed Abel. Now, 26 generations later, he comes in as Yitro, and his daughter Tzipporah is the soulmate, his soulmate, but he owes it to Abel, who's now Moses, in order to balance the universe. His desire mm-hmm. for that soulmate had to be controlled. He had to stop his reactions. He would have eventually been married to his soulmate if he had learned to control his reactions. Abel had to die because Abel was too comfortable with the physical world. Because the Torah says that Abel also brought a sacrifice, meaning it wasn't a priority. The spiritual work wasn't a priority to him. So now Moses has to correct Abel's problems, Abel's mistakes, and what does he do? He's the Redeemer. He's doing all the spiritual work. He's correcting Abel's mistake. So now that he has done that, he has to have his wife from that first incarnation when he was Abel, and his bride, his second bride. So Cain, who is Yitro, has to give Moses his wife that he's took his life to prevent him from having. And that's where do you think we get the tradition of the father walking the daughter down and handing it to the son under the chuppah in the marriage ceremony? So,
never thought of that.
So Moses receives his wife Tzipporah from Cain, who is Yitro, by Yitro giving away his soulmate, he's made the correction.
Wow. Okay.
Are there any other questions? Well, I'm going to ask a question that I invited you to ask this morning, but I don't think everybody heard me.
Was this on Psalm?
Yes, Psalm 17, verse 1.
I didn't come on right away, so, okay.
I'm not sure if I understood, but I did do some work on it.
Okay. You want to share what you did?
I'm not sure that's what you were talking about, but I took the verse and wrote all the first letters, and then I wrote the final letters, and then I went to the 72 names, and there were quite a few 72 names using the first letters. I put the number of the name, and I put the meaning of the name, and then I did the same thing. Letters. There were only two from the 72 name. Now, I didn't really have time to check myself to make sure I didn't leave something out or I accidentally put something that wasn't supposed to be there.
Okay.
That was I got. My next step would then be to make some words. Right.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I have taught you.
Okay.
But what I haven't taught you is some of the other techniques. That's what I wanted to teach tonight or explain tonight. So start back at the beginning, and we're just using the first verse, the first letters. And if we look at the number of words in the verse, there are 12 words. If we take the first letters, we get Taf, Lamed, Shin, Yud, Sadi, Hey, Resh, Hey, Taf, Bet, Shin, and Mem. The question is, those 12 letters are now a word. And that word, depending on the vowels that we choose to use, is a repetitive phrase, a repetitive mantra, a repetitive word that has all of the energy of that verse. So the question is, what vowels should we use? And the two methods that are taught is we can use the vowels that are used in the verse itself. So on the top, you have the Shiva, the two dots. And on the Lamed, you have the two dots. And on the Shin, you have one dot, the E sound. And the Yud, you have the Shva, the two dots. And so forth. The Tzadi has the Sigol. And if you use those vowels, you get the following. Teleshitze Hariat Beishisimi. If you're energy sensitive, you felt the energy of those sounds. If you use those sounds as a repetitive tool, you're going to find yourself going into a deeper and deeper meditation. You're going to find yourself traveling into yourself, which will take you out of yourself. This is a technique that the prophets used. This is a technique that the sages have used. And this is a technique that we can use on every one of our personal verses. But there's another way, another set of vowels we can use. And that's the root vowel for those letters. And in that case, it becomes ta la shi ta he re he ta be si me. And again, it's a repetitive sound, a repetitive mantra, a repetitive phrase. And you need to experiment with your own personal verses, because what you have created is a name of God. Where will that name of God take you in your meditation? What dimension? What world? What will you experience? They're going to take you to different places, different dimensions, different worlds, depending on which one you use. And what I'm using this verse, because I had said this verse is a good verse to utilize, because the energy of the verse is, I explained in the recording. So by utilizing these two different repetitive sounds as a mantra, and I don't like to use mantra because it's got an Eastern base, but it's a way of explaining to you. That's in addition to what Hannah said that she had done by looking at these letters and finding which 72 names can be made out of those letters, just as I did with the year 5776. The 25-word verse that we do every day, I transformed it into the eight names of God. Now, if I change the order of those letters, I go to a different dimension and a different world. So you begin to see how amazing the Torah is, and how if we have nothing else to do, we don't have to earn a living, but we want to be connected to God. Which aspect of God, which attribute of God, which world that God is inhabiting, which dimension? These are the techniques that we need to practice. These are the techniques we need to learn.
Chinook,
go ahead.
Is there a significance when one of those 72 names is the name for you? For myself, like mine is 62. Well, 62 was one of the names from the last letters, using the last letters.
The last letters are telling us it has to do with the final generations. So in our world, you and I, yes, it is significant. The technique that I taught you in the verse that we looked at for the year 5776, that I use the first letters and you use, in this case, you're using the last letters, it all relates. But you have to use those names as a repetitive phrase to see where it takes you. There are also other techniques that will get you to those places, to those worlds, to those dimensions. And all of that we teach in the Sefer Yetzirah.
No.
So you begin to see how astrology ties into all of the rest of what we teach. Yes, Malka, go ahead.
What did you mean by the last generation? And are you talking in a specific world? Or are you talking about this world that we're in right now, the physical world?
I'm talking about this physical world.
Okay.
The three other planets that we just spoke of about the astrology, that those outer only affect souls who are in the last generation. This is their last lifetime and the generation where Mashiach will manifest. But do we know if Mashiach's going to manifest in this generation? The modern sages are telling us yes. The Chofetz Chaim said that the War of Armageddon started with the First World War, and it will be in three stages: World War I, World War II, and the Third World War, which hasn't happened. And all of the other side wars that have been going on, he also projected as part of his teachings. So he's saying that this generation, which started in roughly the early 1900s, is the final generation. So we, in his opinion, we are part of that final generation. Last letters of the words, when we do the same techniques that I've just described, that would only apply to people who are in the final generation, which means our people now, the people I'm teaching.
Let me ask you a question just to clarify. What do you consider as a generation? Some, there's debates, 40, 70, 100. So what does Kabbalah sees or defines as a generation?
I haven't completed it, but if you go on the Revealed Wisdom page and you scroll mm-hmm. past the classes, you'll see a number of matrices on that page. One of them has to do with which generation your particular soul is in. So you can be, you are in a generation that's a 7-year cycle of years. You are in a generation that is a 10-year cycle of years. Another generation is 13 years. Another generation is 15 years. Another generation is 17. Another generation is 18. Another generation is 26. And 22 I skipped. And 32. And 36 and 37 and 40. And then 45 and 52. 63. I probably skipped some in the middle. And 70.
And what is that? Okay. And what is that based on?
It means you have tikkunim for each of those generations. You specifically have a part in the generational tikkun. So you have a part in all of those generations. You're looking for a simple answer. You're looking for one answer. Is it 70? Is it 63? Is it 50?
Yes, that's correct. I am looking for an answer.
And I've given you the answer. It's relative. Each person mm-hmm. has multiple generations that they're connected to. And each of those generations has a generational tikkun. And the work of that generation has to be broken up to all the people of that generation.
So, and what did you base that on? The birth date? Or the... I mean, your matrix... And determining the 7th, the 13th, the 18th, the 40th, 32, whichever, you base that on what kind of, on an individual basis. I mean, we talk about
each of the numbers that I said, that I verbalized, each of those numbers are important Kabbalistic numbers.
Okay.
The generation of seven is dealing with the seven lower sephirot. A generation of 50 is dealing with the Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
A generation of 26 is dealing with a correction having to do with Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
But each generation, every person has connection to all of these different generations. So I can't tell you, oh, your generation is 70 years long. It is,
right.
But there's also a generation that's 63 years long.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So how have I confused everybody?
No, I'll just have to go look at that. I'm not confused. It was just an unanswered question that I've been having
When you go look at that matrix, you're not going to find any answers in the matrix because I haven't completed the work. I have to wait until we have enough funds to automate it so that it becomes automatic.
Okay.
Because we have to determine what is the correction of a generation in our generation that is 7 years long. What's their correction having to do with the lower Sephiroth? Because if we go back 500 years, we were in the generation of 7 years, but it's a different generation. It has a different tikkun, a different aspect of the same tikkun. Because all of these tikkunim are relating back to the one complete correction that Adam and Chava have to experience. Meaning the souls that were in Adam and Chava, which are all the human souls that ever existed. So a lot of that has not been revealed. And for the most part, if you're interested in it, you'll delve into it. If you're not interested in it, it's not part of what you're in this lifetime to reveal. So I don't want you to get upset because you don't know the answer, unless getting upset that you don't know the answer is a motivation to learn the answer.
And then
I should help you find that path to learn the answers.
I'm not upset. I'm just patient. Patiently waiting.
But you're patiently waiting for Mashiach, or you're doing things to bring Mashiach? It's a rhetorical question, Micah.
Yes.
Are there any other questions? You all have a good evening.
Tomorrow morning, thank you.
We will begin the 18th Psalm. Tomorrow afternoon, we will have a deep Zohar class on the Parsha of Noah. At 4:30 and at 7 o'clock, a regular Zohar class on the Parsha of Bishalach. Shalom to all.
Okay, shalom.